So I would like to share with you two or three events that happened when I joined engineering college. The first one was the ragging incidents. In those days, the first year students were called E4s, and then E3 and is the second year, and E2 is the first year, second year. And a third year, and then E1 was the final year students. So each of these, the hostels were kind of broken up into E4 hostel blocks, and E3 and E2 and E1. And it turned out that we didn't know what to expect. We didn't know anything about ragging. And so all these students appeared, and so one of my classmates from Loyola College, his name was John Reddy. John Reddy was, father was Reddy from Andhra Pradesh, and his mother was a British citizen. So he, you know, he was very fair and tall and handsome, and he also, because they were rich, he was from a rich family, he was a day scholar living off campus. So whenever he would come into campus, he would kind of hang out in my room, because we were both classmates in Loyola College. So this one day, he was actually driving a sports car. You know, you can imagine in 1954, driving a sports car. You know, in this case, I think it was a Triumph, and it was kind of an open car, convertible. And so he was sitting in the car, and I was sitting next to him. And obviously, this would attract a lot of attention, and it did. And so he, you know, so some students, second or third year students, you know, kind of made some comment, you know, not being fluent in English. I didn't even fully understand all the comments being made at those, in those days. But I think, you know, so I think John Reddy said, you know, I think one of the students said, you know, the senior student said, "Hello, sweetheart," or something like that. And John Reddy responded in a similar, you know, humorous manner. And that became a major incident. If you're a first-year student, you're not supposed to be speak at all. You're supposed to be seen but not heard. And so immediately they caught hold of him. And unlike other students who might be ragged for 1 or 2 hours, and poor John Reddy kind of got ragged for literally, you know, days, and by the end of that, I think he was actually escaping from the college. He would just come just in time for classes and then leave just after, immediately after the thing, and would not step foot into the hostel blocks because he was kind of being targeted. So that was one incident. And, you know, that was also the time when we had these, you know, kung fu-type movies occasionally. You would see these, you know, Telugu versions of the movies where somebody would do kickboxing type of maneuvers. So, you know, I thought I was one of those. And I was trying to show off to my friend, Chandi John, who is still in Bangalore. And not knowing what I was doing, I kicked him, and it so happened I kicked him in the solar plexus, and not intentionally, and he fell down, doubled over, and he could not recover. And I was kind of looking at him flabbergasted, saying, "Why is he doing that?" You know, all I did was kick him. I didn't realize I hit him in a sensitive spot. And he still remembers that and kind of makes, you know, a big deal out of it. And I kind of feel bad that I did, but that's the kind of thing that would happen in those days. We used to have an arts festival. An arts festival was the time when we would invite students from all the colleges from throughout Madras City, Chennai, and there would be plays that would be performed, and the students from all the colleges would come and sit in and see and have a good time. And one of the attractions were, you know, in engineering college, there are not very many women, maybe, you know, one or two out of 100, would be all these girls would come from other colleges, Queen Mary's College and Ethiraj College and Stella Maris College and so on. I don't know if these colleges are still there after 50 years, but in those days they were kind of famous. And also there would be students from other, you know, Presidency College and so on, which were had a much larger co-ed ratio. And so, you know, and all these engineering students would get all excited, and it was like a festival type of atmosphere, and everybody, you know, would kind of make fun and run around and clown around, and I thought that, you know, we all kind of look forward to this type of an annual event. And finally, we had one person, Narayanan, Narayan, I guess, Narayan Bharadwaj was his full name. He was from Pondicherry Ashram. Unlike the rest of us who went to local schools where we didn't get much of anything, he was very well-rounded educationally and also in sports. So no matter what sports there would be, he would do extremely well. He would play well in basketball, he would play well in volleyball, he would play well in, he would show us all the weightlifting and boxing and various other things. You must remember, coming from a village and a town, I had never seen any of these things. I mean, maybe the only sports I've seen are cricket and tennis. You know, weightlifting was something I never thought about. And boxing, for sure, I might have heard of the phrase, but I didn't know that there was a science of boxing. You know, that by this time I was already 17 years old. You know. But it was kind of a very unique type of thing. And I was kind of impressed with this individual. You know, we were close friends, and we continue to be close friends. Still there, I think. After he graduated, he ended up in Vizag, in the Vizag naval yard where they build ships and so on, smaller ships. So he was a kind of a role model for the rest of us. None of us knew how to do any of those things. And so it was kind of important to see how he would do. And at the same time, you know, we had this thing called NCC, National Cadet Corps. And in NCC, you are trained like it's like the ROTC program here, right? You're trained. That means, you know, so unlike the conventional NCCs for the Army, where every college would have their own NCC program, for the Air Force, there was one for the entire city. And this one would be at the airport near Minambakam Airport. And when I joined the first year, it turned out one of my other classmates, Krishnamurthy, you know, Bekal, was already in the NCC. He joined the Air Wing in the first year of the intermediate, so by that time he was already a senior. And so when he told me that he was kind of going to the Air Wing for a weekend, I said, you know, I think he may have suggested, or I didn't know how, but I also decided to go along with him and enroll in the air wing of the NCC. And that continued for the four-year period from 1954 to 58. For the first 3 years, you know, I was just, you know, they had this various intermediate promotions, Lance Corporal, Corporal, Sergeant, and Under Officer. So Krishnamurti was an Under Officer, and that means he was kind of the senior most of the entire squad, the squadron, and I was kind of low level. And when the final year came, they'd finally, normally most people stay for 3 years. Since I was going to school for 4 years, and I could actually continue for the fourth year, then they finally promoted me to sergeant. I was very impressed that I don't know what I did that's different, but I think they just, because I was the senior most, they probably, of all the people, not the senior most, but the fourth year student, which are unusual. And it turned out, during that period, you not only learned how to be, you know, an under officer, and how to be a, learned the basic skills of marching and doing exercise, you know, various kinds of military training, PT and so on. You also got trained to become a pilot. So during that period, I was given training to become a pilot. And what that meant was I had in those days, in order to fly a plane, you had to, there was an aero, Madras Flying Club or something was there, and they had these biplanes, Tiger Moths, and that's what we trained in. And so I was, I guess, pretty reasonable. The big deal was how quickly you were able to fly solo by yourself. And in my case, it was like 13 hours after I started flying. Most people take about 13, 15, 16. And there was one student that actually became flew solo at the end of 9 hours. And again, I said, you know, what is about this person? It turns out his father, you know, knew something about airplanes and was able to explain the details of how they fly and what they do and so on. They were also had these model aeroplanes, you know, basically small planes which you could fly, and they are kind of tethered, and they would kind of go round and round. You could control it, and if you control it, it'll go up and down, and you know, kind of faster and slower and so on. And to me, that was like magic. I said, I didn't know how you control it, and unfortunately, I never did manage to learn to fly model aeroplanes, because only people that are kind of senior and doing well got an opportunity to fly that, but I was not one of them until the fourth year. By that time, I don't remember why I never flew it, but there was no opportunity to do so. But one of the things we did after, because I was there for 4 years, unlike most others who only flew 40 or 50 hours, I ended up flying like 110 hours. So at one point, I nearly debated whether I should become a pilot, because I had only needed another 100 more hours of flying, and then I could have become a pilot, commercial pilot, if I chose to. But somehow, I guess I couldn't afford it, you know, because basically, even then, it would have cost quite a bit of money and for flying. And here was an engineering degree, which is probably equally good. So I never ended up, following up on the commercial pilot's license. And I flew a little bit more afterwards after I completed my engineering degree, I went to Australia. And there, I went and flew a couple of times. And when I got married in 1966, one of the first requirements of my wife was that if I was going to fly, then she doesn't want to get married. She was very afraid of, you know, planes crashing or something. So I kind of kept my promise since then, although I would have liked to have continued flying. But one of the interesting aspects of the second, the final years of flying, after you do the basic 130 or 40 hours, you start learning aerobatics. And, the problem with these days is most students learning to fly never do aerobatics. In those days, you know, so they kind of showed you three or four different maneuvers. One was stall. When you stall, you know, you kind of slow down and slow down, and you kind of start falling like a free fall onto the ground, and people can get into your stall, and you, if you don't know exactly how to recover, then you can crash and die. And so one of the things they taught you immediately after you learned how to fly by yourself is one was flying, local flying, but you do the long distance flying. Normally they kind of gave you an assignment to fly about 100 miles out and came back. So usually it would be to a place called Vellore, and it so happened the village I come from is only a short detour up north and then back to Vellore. And so I went off to my village and did some aerobatics, and I think all the people were scared and impressed, and you could see all the faces looking up. But fortunately, I never crashed. That was a good thing. From from my village, on the way to Vellore, it turns out you go through Tirupati. So since Lord Venkateshwara was our family god, so I went there and did some pradakshinam or something with the plane, and then from there went off to Vellore, and then came back. Of course, all of that I did was not completely legal. You're supposed to go straight to Vellore and come back. But it so happened it was not too far away from the path. And so it all worked out. But it was a lot, I'm not sure. It was fun, but it's not sure what would have happened if I got into trouble. I didn't get into trouble, so everything was okay. And another time when I was flying, normally if you're trying to land in the airport in the plane at the same time when a regular commercial plane is trying to land, they're supposed to tell you to kind of go away and come back and land later so that you don't accidentally run into the commercial plane. And so apparently the way they indicate that is they fire flares. At that time, there was no wireless communication to tell you to where you could get permission to land or not. It was all by visual signals, and they would fly a flag on the control tower, and I would look at that. If I'm still landing, they would fly fire flares into the air, saying, like red flares, saying you should not land. So I probably obviously not watching for it. So I ended up landing, and the plane also, I didn't cause any trouble because I was landing on the grass and the other plane was landing on the landing strip. So there was no danger. But then I got, was taken to task, and I said, well, I'm sorry, I didn't see the flare, but nothing bad happened as a result of it. At another time I was landing, it turned out the water, the grass was really wet, and there was some puddles of water. And so I landed on, nobody recognized that I was, the grass was wet and there were these puddles. So I took off and landed. And here I landed and I was just coming to a slowing down and came up against one of these puddles and nosed over. That meant it was a tiny plane, right? It's a Tiger Moths were kind of small. And the engine tilted over and the propeller went into the ground. Fortunately, nothing else happened. It didn't catch fire or anything else. And I didn't know what happened because I wasn't expecting to nose over, and nobody ever told me such a thing can happen. And so I was completely bewildered. Then I opened the cockpit and stepped on the wing and stepped down. Then all these fire engines and everybody came, and I was kind of looking at them strangely saying, what the hell happened here? Because I had no clue what was going on, and this nose over was a complete mystery to me of why it happened. And anyway, again, because it was kind of deemed that it was not my mistake that happened. It, you know, there was this bad patch on the grass that was not noticed before, and therefore it was something that we were not told not to fly or land over. So anyway, it was kind of an exciting time learning how to fly and flying and doing aerobatics and loops and stalls and rolls. Rolls were kind of the hardest of them because you're not supposed to lose any height. You know, you're supposed to roll without losing any height. And naturally, you know, that's one of those particular events where you do lose height. So that's the part of my life on doing something outside of the engineering college education, which turned out to be quite exciting. And there was one other event of that kind, which I'm sorry that it happened, but again, it's one of those things that was outside of our control. Annually, you know, they take these air wing students to a camp somewhere, and so we all went off to the North India somewhere, and we were in a camp. Maybe it was at the Republic Day Parade or something, and then we were coming back in this train from Delhi. Again, most of the train trip is a blank to me right now. I can't remember any of it, except when we came near Vijayawada, a whole bunch of girls got into the train, into a wagon next to ours, and so some of us got very excited, and so we jumped into a neighboring wagon, waving our hands to them and all the rest of it, the train started moving, we kind of went back in, except there was this one student who was in the air wing who kept on waving and was leaning out of the compartment and waving to the girls. And then it so happened we went past a station. I don't remember the name of the station. It was near Vijayawada and Guntur. And the station, and this guy, there were two tracks in the station. In between, there was a lamp post or something between the two tracks. So this guy was leaning out sufficiently that he hit his head hit the pole, and he fell down. And suddenly we noticed it, and then we were all kind of very upset and didn't know what to do. The way you stop the train in those days was by pulling the chain. And so we pulled the chain, and the train came to a stop a mile later. And then they said, why? What happened? You know, we said, this person has fallen down, you know, in the previous station. And so the train backed up. By that time, you know, they found him and put him on the platform, where he was kind of lying, and I'm not sure he was dead by that time, But anyway, the squadron leader of the of our contingent, a regular Air Force officer, was there, and they wanted to know what the hell we were doing in this other cabin waving to the girls. So we all said, well, you know, the train started fast and we had to kind of get into some cabin. We got in. We were not waving, but this one guy was waving. That's not true. We all were waving, but we only did it for a little while. This person got carried away and unfortunately died as a result of it. So some of us with the squadron leader went to Guntur Medical Hospital, and there he was pronounced dead. And so we all went back the following day, and then there was an inquiry, military inquiry, about what happened. We said, you know, what we thought we were doing, which was slightly different, which was true, but not complete truth, right? We didn't say anything about waving to the girls. We said, you know, we jumped in and this guy was leaning out and he hit the post and fell down. And so that was another interesting experience. But it was not quite a court-martial. Court-martial is when you're being found guilty, I guess. This was mainly an inquiry by a team of officers who were trying to determine why a cadet on travel or duty got into an accident and died, and what could be done in the future. But anyway, the two or three of us who were called to the inquiry were not punished or anything. We were left. We were told to go back, and I never heard anything more about it. But I believe they said and declared it was an accidental death, and left it at that. I felt very sorry for him and his parents. He was from Kerala somewhere, a handsome young man, and died, you know, very young in his life. He was not from our college. I think he was from one of the other colleges in Madras City, but I don't remember what. So these are the kinds of events that happened. One other event that happened that was very interesting was I told you about John Reddy, who was kind of rich and famous, so to speak, had a car and other things. So I believe it was in our second year of engineering college, he got married, you know, basically. By the way, he's still around. He's an industrialist and lives out of Vizag or something, Rajahmundry. But in those days, the bride, he was the bride, you know, they were, you know, it was what we call an exchange wedding. He and his sister were marrying brother and sister of another related family. And the related family was well known in those days. They were the owners of a movie studio called Wahini Studios. And the owner of that was a person called B. Nagireddy, right? Nagireddy's son and daughter got married to John Reddy and his sister. And obviously, because we were all his close friends, we were all invited to this wedding in the Wahini Studios. And the amazing thing about it was most extravagant, opulent wedding I ever seen up to that date, and maybe even afterwards. But the memorable part of it was the fact that all the movie stars that we see in the movies, Anjali Devi, Banumati, and N.T. Rama Rao, Nageswar Rao, all of these young actors in those days, they're still around, at least Nageswar Rao is still alive. But N.T. Rama Rao passed away, and I believe both the movie actresses have mentioned, Banumati and Anjali Devi may have passed away. I don't keep track of these things anymore. But in those days, it was a big deal, you know, to see a movie star. But to see a movie star walking around as though you're right next to her was a big deal. And everybody was kind of getting all excited to see them, and that was another memorable event of that period. So there are lots of interesting things that you remember, but most of the rest of it is a blur. There's not very much you remember. I don't remember any of my classes or what I learned in the classes. I don't remember most of the professors except the principals. You know, there was Major Morley, who had lost one of his hands in one of the wars, so he was didn't have a hand. So he was quite a character, tall and, you know, he was either an Anglo-Indian or a British person, and he was kind of appointed the principal of the college. And so, he and I met a few times because I was head of something or other, like a mess or some council or something. And so I would say something, and he would say, no, you can't do that, and you have to do it this way. And I said, okay. So it's all a learning experience. You learn lots of non-academic curricular things in the process, but they're probably equally valuable in life. So one more event I remember of those times was another character I met, person. His name is Malakonda Reddy. He was a student from Andhra Pradesh State. When I joined in my first year of engineering, he was already in the final year of engineering. And that means he would have joined in 1951 or something. And Malakonda Reddy, since then, has gone on to start an engineering college in Hyderabad called CBIT, Chaitanya Bharati Institute of Technology, which is one of the top-rated engineering colleges. But at that time, he was already very gifted. You know, he was a poet, and he could write things, and unlike me, you know, he was really, you know, truly gifted person, and so he was able to do many things that were kind of amazing to me, you know, watching him do. And one of the things was, we decided to have a play. You know, all the Telugu students got together, and you know, we had a play, and the play was rehearsed. It was a play with actors from all over the city, Chennai. At that time, the Andhra Pradesh and Tamil Nadu were in single state called Madras Presidency or something. And so, by the time I joined, they had already bifurcated, became two states. So that happened, I think, in 1953. In 1951, he was one of the students from Nellore that joined Engineering College in Guindy. And so we were actually in a play, and he was the hero of the play. And I had a tiny bit part. I had just said, you know, one sentence or something. But the reason I remember it is I forgot my one line, even though it was only one line. And then I made up something else on the thing. And the way I was confused and the way I acted apparently was sufficiently funny that everybody laughed. And so then they adopted that as the way, you know, even though it was the wrong thing to say, they included it because they wanted to get laughs in the play. But the other interesting thing was our director of the play was also a budding director of movies. His name was Tapi Chanakya, and he was just in the process at that time of directing a new movie called Rozul Marai. After a year or two after this play was done, that was released, and it was one of the successful movies, made a lot of money for all of them. So that's why I remember that event, the fact there were these two people who have since become well-known. Malakonda Reddy, you know, he's still there and very active. He must be about 75 or 73 or something. And he's kind of semi-retired, but he's kind of respected in the community as someone who had pioneered in the colleges. And CBIT is kind of ranked among the top colleges in the state. And the second person I remember is the director, Thapi Chanakya, although I only met him a few times, is because he was the one that actually was able to directed our play, which was just a college play, but this movie went on to make a lot of money. Thank you. That's it.